Support for Fresnoland comes from the F3 Initiative. F3, which stands for Farms, Food, Future, is building a stronger ag economy right here in the Central Valley. The initiative supports local farmers and food vendors with access to resources, provides ag education through local community colleges, and funds innovation to keep agriculture sustainable for the next generation. Sign up for the F3 newsletter, follow along on social media, and learn how to get involved at f3initiative.org.
Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. Today on Fresnolandia, we are joined by Tom Steyer. Steyer is a longtime investor, philanthropist, and environmental and climate advocate who has played a major role in national and state politics, including a run for president in 2020. He is now running for governor of California on a platform centered on making the state more affordable, especially when it comes to housing, energy costs, and the everyday expenses facing working families. And in this particular conversation, we're going to focus on what those ideas mean for the Central Valley and for Fresno specifically.
So, Tom, I want to start with a question about a book that's been in the ether, Abundance, came out last year, last March. What's your take on the abundance discourse?
I think the basic point behind this abundance movement is that we actually have to be able to get back to building things in the real world, the physical world again. And if you look at what California's been doing, we have been crushing it in the cyber world. We have been crushing it online. We have been creating the biggest companies in the world, the most value in the world. 60% of the world's artificial intelligence money is going into California, one state in the United States. At the same time, we have found it as a state extraordinarily difficult to get anything done in the physical world. So that probably the biggest problem Californians have has to do with housing costs. They can't make rent, they can't afford to buy a house. And the reason is we're not building houses. We literally cannot get houses built for a price that people can afford. And there's a start. Secondly, I bet everybody in Fresno would like to have high-speed rail. It's something that would be great for the region. It has multiple positive benefits. And we've been struggling with it for 17 years. And that's a physical issue, getting things done in the physical world. So do I think that is an important point to be made? Absolutely. We need to get cracking again and able to build physical things. Do we need to do it in a context of the awareness of the second order effects of doing that? Of course we do. We're not going to throw out the idea that impacts on the environment. We're not going to throw out all of a sudden broader awarenesses. Having said that, the perfect is the enemy of the good. And to a large extent, for young people to have any hope of buying a house, if we can drive down the cost of rent by building, I've said, a million houses in the next 4 years, that is something that's going to make people's lives much, much better. And are there issues about doing that intelligently? Of course there are. And I'm very happy to have that conversation about what smart growth looks like. But we need growth.
What's your diagnosis of the housing problem? Because Governor Newsom has made also significant, ambitious claims around building more housing. His goals have not been met by a long margin. We'd see that particularly in the Central Valley, where just the gap between building and what is the demand is so high. So where do you go with that?
So I have been saying, and this is not a novel thing to say, that it's not a silver bullet, it's silver buckshot. There's a series of things that are stopping us. It starts with basically permitting multiple regulations, multiple oversight, an inability to get permits on a timely basis. That was partially resolved by the redo of CEQA last year, but then there's zoning issues. Even in the places, if you get a permit, is it zoned for the places where you should be building, in my opinion, where we need to be building and where people want to live? That's the second issue. But the third issue is, can we build per square foot physically at a price that people can afford? I know that there are a lot of places here where people have permits, where they have zoned, and they can't build because they can't get it done at a price that people can afford with a margin for the developer. To me, every one of those, it goes on. There's issues about condos, about how long the liability is. This is something where you have to get down in the weeds and solve every problem. But one of the things that people are not talking about is that per square foot issue.
Yeah.
And to me, there is technology. Look, We're the technology state, right? We're the one that's leading the world in just about every technology you can think of, including building. There are ways to manufacture houses, apartments, offsite for a much lower price per square foot. And we're going to need to do that. And this is something where I want that to be union labor. This is not something where we're moving away from that. But we need to get it done. And the perfect is, I just think, the point of abundance is the perfect is the enemy of the good. We need to get a bunch of stuff done, and we need to be focused on it, and we can't let it be stopped.
Are there any cities or places across the globe that you think have solved for this construction cost problem that we should look to in California?
Is it modular housing? What is it? It's because the cost of construction and financing, those are often the barriers that we hear from developers.
I know they do, but is it modular? Look, people have been talking about modular housing for a long time. There's technology that's a generation after that, just so you know.
Yeah.
And it's not stuff that hasn't been done. It can go up at least 8 floors. So it's not just taking boxes and putting them on top of each other. It's a generation at least beyond that. So what we're seeing, is there a place that's doing it? Look, there are a lot of places that are building a lot faster than us. Why do they do that? It's a whole, if you look at the state, which is usually compared to California as the opposite, Texas, much faster to permit and easier to permit, no worries about sprawl, very cheap land, and they build the old-fashioned way with very low cost in terms of they're willing to have people work at very low labor rates that we would never want to put up with. So there's a bunch of ways where people are doing it. And I'm saying, as in so many things in California, our answer is technology.
Yeah.
And it's got to be technology. And it's got to be priority, urgency, technology. It's easy to say, oh, it's hard to get a permit. If you're the governor, you can push. Let's find out what the choke points are. Let's work. One size does not fit all in housing in California, as it does not fit most things in California, because we're such a big, diverse state. Fresno's issues are not the same as LA's issues, are not the same as Shasta's issues. But the point is, there are answers to all of these, and it's working with the local representatives and the local developers to make sure that it actually, what we really need is to have people being looking at a screen and going, that worked, that works, and we're starting today. And this is going to be a good deal, and we're going to build.
Let's pivot to talking about PG&E. I just paid my PG&E bill this morning, and you always
how much was it?
I don't want to share that, but it was more than I thought it was going to
be.
Was
it 4 figures?
Okay,
no.
I have paid a 4-figure PG&E bill, absolutely.
In the summer?
Yes.
And in the winter.
And I live in a 102-year-old house. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm not far behind a 90-year-old house. So you've discussed decreasing PG&E bills and taking on utility power. What does that actually look like as governor, and what levers do you have to exact measurable change?
So, Jordan, I'd like to take a step back to describe, because I think we have a structural problem here.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm not saying people are bad people. We have a structural problem where the incentives are all wrong. We have a monopoly. And in the history of the planet Earth, monopolies always do the same thing. They serve the monopoly. And a normal business is trying to produce the best product at the lowest price. That's their job. Because they have other businesses. If they don't, they're not going to sell anything. But if you're a monopoly, you want to produce the worst product at the highest price. And if people don't like it, guess what? It's a monopoly.
No choice.
You've got no choice. Mm-hmm. And that's the structural issue we're dealing with. We have a monopoly that's doing what's in its best interest, not in the best interest of its customers, and it's overseen by the Public Utilities Commission. And being a Public Utilities Commission, we're going to start with changing that. But let's face it, it's whack-a-mole. It's like they keep coming up with things that are good with them, and you take your mallet and whack it down. That's not good enough. But basically, let's get some numbers out here. Fresno, I was looking at the numbers, and they're truly astonishing. I think Fresno might have the highest electricity rates in the country.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
More than double the national average. More than double the national average.
Yeah.
And if you look, you guys are paying something like 40 to 44 cents a kilowatt hour, okay? It costs between 1 to 2 cents to generate electricity from wind or solar. It costs a couple of cents to store it in a battery, and you're paying 40 to 44 cents.
Yeah.
Rest is overhead.
Yeah. How would you approach reforming the Public Utility Commission? What would you do?
That's the first step.
Okay. All right.
It is a question about understanding incentives. So, for instance, we're spending as PG&E is spending $30 billion to underground lines.
Yeah.
That is going into the rate base. People think that it works like a normal business, like you charge, you have costs, the rest is income. That is not how this works. The way this works is you get the Public Utility Commission to agree to a capital expenditure. So building a line, undergrounding a line, redoing the building the grid, putting up poles, capital expenditures. That goes into the rate base, and you then get a guaranteed return off that. So if you're a monopoly electricity provider, your job is to get stuff in the rate base. So that, for instance, if you have real risk of fire, the best thing you can do is spend an enormous amount of money. Say, I'm going to choose $30 billion to underground lines at $3.5 million a mile and put it in the rate base, and you get 10% of that, guaranteed by the state of California. My point being, they don't have an incentive to do it cheap. They're not looking for the new technology. They're not looking for the microgrid. They're not looking to change the lines, all of which are possible, all of which are infinitely cheaper. That's not a good deal for them. So to a very large extent, if you want to change the oversight, you have to understand the kind of crazy inside, crazy is the wrong word, but misplaced incentives of a monopoly given the structure of electricity monopolies and PUCs. Okay. And so the first thing is to say, and I'll give you a perfect example of this, Jordan. It takes an incredibly long time to sell new technologies to electric monopolies. Traditionally, and these numbers may be a little old, but directionally they're actually accurate. A new technology in Silicon Valley gets picked up by the median customer. So if there are 100 customers, the 50th customer buys it in 18 months. If there's a new technology for electricity utilities, the median customer, the 50th customer, buys it in 35 years. We don't have 35 years. We can see there is an electricity revolution going on in the world with new technology, a lot of it coming from California. So that when they talk about rebuilding the grid, we don't need to rebuild the grid, to be clear. There is new technology basically to take the efficiency of the grid from 35 to 42%, where it is, up to at least 60%. So that's taking it up approximately 50% without building anything. But you know what? Rebuilding the grid is a huge capital expenditure.
Right.
Using artificial intelligence or information technology to use the grid more efficiently is not helpful.
So how do you shift those incentives? Is it about reducing the profit margins?
It's about it's really, when we look at it, they have to get paid for doing different things because we're paying them to make capital expenditures and they're making capital expenditures. And they'll argue that's the only thing we can do. And if we don't do this, you guys will have no lights and you guys will have no heat and you will have no cooling and you're screwed.
Yeah.
The first thing is to change the oversight. But the second thing is to introduce competition. Because what we've seen, and just to give you an example, I know that Fresno tried for a couple of years to get a municipal electric utility. That people were so fed up with the costs, the poor performance, that they tried to get and they failed. There are two big cities in California that do have municipal utilities, which is Los Angeles and Sacramento. It took Sacramento 10 years to get away from PG&E. And their costs per kilowatt hour about half, yeah. Just so you know. So what I want to do is introduce competition, because there are a lot of flat roofs in this state, most of them being big warehouses. There is no reason. We don't need permits. We don't need to go into the desert. We got these flat roofs right here. We can generate electricity off those flat roofs really cheaply. We can store it really cheaply. And the question is, what can they do with that? And we've pushed something where we have a monopoly. They don't get to do that.
What do you think about the upfront cost to creating a municipal utility? That's the biggest challenge that I understand is who pays for that?
You know? From my standpoint, I am much more interested in starting with very quick oversight, but moving to local competition in multiple ways. Look, one of the things I've spent, I don't know how I sound, but believe it or not, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this big energy transition in
we
the world
you.
And in the state.
Yes.
And I know that if we change the rules, it can be extremely profitable to generate electricity and distribute it locally. to get, it's called, if you generate electricity, who cares? You got to sell it to somebody. If you, normally in California, you only have one choice. You have to sell it back to PG&E, right, the price they tell you they'll pay. If you can do what's called getting behind the meter, which means selling it directly to somebody else, you can give that person a great deal. You can get a great deal for yourself. And that's what's going to drive down the cost of electricity. It's local microgrids, local generation, community-based.
On the west side of the Central Valley, we're seeing a massive explosion of solar farms on farmland that's being transitioned out of being farmland because of water. And I think that's been a big question that's been on a lot of our minds locally is, we're generating this massive amount of solar, but we're not keeping it locally. So how do you do that?
Look, one of the things that's going on is there is a gigantic revolution. I was saying there's an electricity revolution. The battery revolution is gigantic. Electricity is taking over from fossil fuels. Renewables are the cheapest. They are sweeping the world. And the accompanying part, obviously the issue about renewables is they're so much cheaper than fossil fuels, but they're intermittent. The sun isn't always out. The wind isn't always blowing. The accompanying revolution is in batteries around the world. And if you look, it's not just that the cost of batteries went down 80% last decade and is supposed to go down another 80% this decade. Okay, that's a pretty big move, just to be clear. But what that the other thing that's going on is duration. The time during which a battery will hold a charge is going up really dramatically. And what that means is the intermittency is in effect going away. And so when we look at generation here and we want to sell it here and we want local generation and local sales, batteries are the thing that's going to make the difference, really. And that is something where we can see, you can see this in most clearly in the way that electric vehicles are going around the world. We live in a country where the president, where Donald Trump has said, we're going right back to the 1950s. We're going, it's like, we're going to go back to a woody station wagon that gets 3 miles to the gallon. Okay, no one else in the world thinks that's smart. Everybody else is watching the price of Chinese EVs, which now for the equivalent of a Lexus costs less than $20,000. And that's a battery question, because an electric vehicle is really a big battery with a car around it. That's all it is. So when you see the price of EVs going down 1% a month in the world, that's battery cost.
Yeah.
That's battery duration, battery density. And when we think about where we're going, we need to be part of this revolution. This is happening. It's like fighting for the horse and buggy. It's like, it's not going to work. Fossil fuels, it's going to take a long time to get off them, but the truth is it's over. The argument is over. The physics are you use up a third of the energy in fossil fuels by combusting them.
Yeah.
And it goes on from there. It's not a question of who's going to win. The fight is over.
So a lot of the reforms that you've talked about are systemic in nature. What are the political incentives at play that have stopped your predecessors in office from taking those on?
I think a couple of, if we're going to talk about electricity specifically, I want to talk about it in general and then specifically electricity. Look, it's very hard to take on well-financed interests that have strong lobbying arms, which can go on the air and make their argument very strongly with the money that they have, can lobby, can have PACs, so they have political action committees that raise money to support the legislators who do what they go along with their beliefs and to go against people who challenge them. They have a lot of power. And traditionally, I've won 3 significant ballot propositions in the state of California over the last 15 years, always taking on a big special interest. The oil companies, the tobacco companies, multinationals who are gaming our state income tax. And every one of those, it wasn't like people didn't know what was going on. It's that it's very hard to take them on because they don't like to lose and they have a lot of money and they have a lot of lobbying power and they have a lot of sort of presence in the state.
How would you approach that differently?
I'm not going to approach it differently. I'm going to approach it exactly the same, which is I don't care. I don't owe them anything. I'm never taking their money. I've never taken their money. If they don't like it, that's too bad. The thing I care about is the people of California. especially the working people of California. It is not okay. The working people of California are paying 15% of their disposable income for electricity. That is not okay. Yeah. So when I think about this, when I think about electricity, you've got to be willing to say, structurally, there needs to be a change here. And I understand that the existing monopolies will not like it, and we have to care about the people of California and the people of Fresno, not them and their bottom lines. And I want to say, in terms of electricity, there's one other thing. Sorry, Daniel, no, I just want to get this in there, which is this. This is a complicated topic. God is in the details. You can't half-ass this, if you'll excuse me saying that. You just can't. And so if you're going to do it, you really have to understand it, and you have to be willing to be in the details and really concentrate. And we had a reform back around 2000 where it really didn't work. They didn't understand the details. They weren't in a position to actually understand the second order effects of what they were doing. And so I think people are leery because it's complicated. And I think any time you've got a special interest saying, this is a little too complicated for you, you should grab your wallet, because you know what? It's not that complicated. It's a monopoly and they're charging us 40 to 44 cents. Okay, now let's take it from there, because that's a structural problem that's not going to solve itself unless we change the structure. And it doesn't matter how many times they explain, this is a little, your IQ isn't quite up to this one, citizens of California. It's like, baloney. This is a straightforward thing. And getting it right really does matter. And being fair about it really does matter. But whether we have to do it and whether we can drive down these costs, that's, just think about it. We will be able to generate and store electricity for less than 4 cents a kilowatt hour, and we're getting charged 40 to 44, okay?
Yeah.
We can do it locally. You have so much sun here. I think you have 300 days of sun here.
It's great, mostly.
The battery revolution is going on around the world, whether we like it or not. The ability to upgrade the grid is going on around the world, specifically in California. That is available. Are we really not quite smart enough to grasp this, or is really this structurally the wrong way to go?
Yeah. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today and for your thoughts about PG&E. I know when I was paying my bill this morning, I was thinking about it, and I appreciate that it's on your mind as well.
It's nice to meet you guys. It's been really fun, and I hope to get back here to talk to you again, because you guys really know what you're talking about, and it's a pleasure.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.